Well, good morning and welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Also listening to us on 88.1 WSBR in Lee, Lennox, and Stockbridge. Watching us on the Pittsfield, the PCTV Select app, that is, free to download. And also on 1301 on your cable channel, Access Pittsfield. Sean Sayre here with you this morning. We're actually recording the program. It's going to be airing on June 25th, so welcome to June 25th if you're listening to us right now. We have Mayor Peter Marchetti on the show this morning. All kinds of things going on in the city these days. Everything from road construction to open space and treating lakes in the city and lots of other stuff. So let's get right into that interview right now with Mayor Marchetti. Good morning, Mayor. How are you?
I'm great. Good morning. How are you?
Doing okay. Got a nice, bright, sunny day out here today, the day we're recording this show. I think Thursday is supposed to be a little cloudier and a little wetter. I'm not sure exactly what, but Thursday the 25th is also the day of the middle school moving up ceremonies and one of the last days of school for all of our Pittsfield students. So kind of a big, momentous day. That's when we get to play the Alice Cooper School's Out song, right?
There you go. Although one of the Taconic and Conti, I think, go one extra day.
Yeah, right. And they had some issues during the year that other schools didn't. I don't know if it was a water main break or whatever it was, something.
I think Taconic's was a sewer.
Sewer, yeah.
And Conti's may have been water.
So, yeah, unfortunately, those kids get to go
one more day.
Just what everybody wants on June 25th, right? So lots of stuff going on, and of course, in the news recently, there is some shootings and some difficulty in the Morningside neighborhood and other neighborhoods in the city. So just want to go through that a little bit. What do we know so far about, we do have a suspect apparently in the shooting that happened near Pleasure Ave in the Morningside neighborhood on Tyler Street.
Yeah, so last night the police department released the suspect that we're looking for in the case.
Released the name
and a photo with a reminder that this person is considered armed and dangerous and they should call the police, not go after them themselves. You know, and it's, for me, it's been a little bit of a complicated thing. I was away, so staying in contact with that there. But two, everybody wants to know everything. And during an investigation, until you've dotted your I's and crossed your T's, you're not going to put any information out there that could do two things. One, give the person that we're looking for like a heads up.
Yeah.
And the you know, immediate future piece, and then also not do anything to damage the investigation. So, the fact that, in less than a week's time, we know the suspect and we're out there looking for the person, I think speaks volumes to the work that the PD does. And so, you know, I think that, one of the things that we should discuss is maybe a community meeting at Morningside to discuss the issues. You know, I received some comments from folks saying, well, we're not hearing from you. You know, we on Saturday had a pretty strong statement that this activity is not going to be tolerated all summer long, but I don't know what that magic bullet is to stop it from happening other than really cracking down on some of the issues that we know are the underlying issues.
And this, you know, people, I'm sure the first thing they're thinking of when they've got a suspect that is at large still that is, has not been apprehended. At least we know who the person is. And by putting it out, the Pittsfield Police Department is looking for information, right, from people, what they might know, who they might know. If you've heard any, you know, give any tips or whatever, contact the police department, probably on the non-emergency line might be a good idea. And that will help the process. And that's, you know, usually as much information as you can put out. But people want to know, you know, are they safe right now? I mean, that's probably the main thing that people would want to know. If there's a suspect at large and they can't get all the information that they need to get, can they feel safe in the neighborhood and the community?
Well, I mean, I think the answer is yes. It was clear to me through the conversation we had that it was a targeted attack. I mean, the problem with that is, do you feel safe? if somebody shows up to shoot me right now and they have bad aim and get you, you know, are you safe? You know, you weren't the intended target.
Right.
And so it's hard to kind of give a blanket, yeah, you're safe. And, you know, I definitely don't want to downplay the situation, yeah. But I don't think that this person that we're looking for is just out randomly shooting.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if that's what you're looking for as a definition to safe, then I think that's a true statement.
Yeah. Fair to say the police department have their hands full with some of the things going on in the community that we don't hear about or see about unless you're in those certain circles, right?
Well, I mean, I think A, they're short-staffed, and B, the number of calls and the issues. And, you know, I was like, summer's officially started because here we go. And I think mm-hmm. every summer we start this way, which, you know, I wish I had an answer of how do you prevent this? Mm-hmm. You know, I get messages all the time about how dirty Onoto Lake or Pontusic Lake looks like. I'm not the one that's littering. There's trash barrels if people would use them. So there's a piece of I can't control everybody else's behaviors, but we can do the best we can to make sure that, A, if a crime is committed, we solve it as fast as we can, and B, try to prevent things if we know. You know, I know that the PD has great intel, and there are things that we can solve before it happens. And, you know, we need to kind of double down on that and ensure that we can stop something from happening if we can.
And there's certainly, you know, no shortage of social media rumors and things like that. You know, not everything is connected, even though people will right. jump to those conclusions right away, right? You don't have the whole story. So everything basically is conjecture. Eventually the truth will come out on that, and you know, just right. the fact that within a week you have a named suspect, and then that will hopefully lead to that person's arrest. So that will wrap at least that part of it up. But you know, it's impossible not to think that yeah, there's more going on beneath the surface than most people realize.
Well, I mean, I think that that's possibly true, right? I think the other piece, you know, from a social media standpoint, I wish I could stop all of that.
Sure.
And I think that
that's what every community would like to do.
Right. If it's a drug related case, okay, get drugs off the streets. But that's an easy thing to say, not as easy thing to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think bigger picture, the social media place, right? So let's take the shooting last Thursday night. Social media is all over the place. We're announcing who got shot, and what if you're the family member who's reading that online? Because when PD show up to a scene, their first case is making sure we get them medical attention as fast as possible, and not necessarily notifying the next of kin or, you know, the family member if they're still alive. And
right.
So how about letting the system kind of work? And then, you know, we all know what happened. You know, I live in southeastern Mass, but southeastern Pittsfield, but I know what happened at Tyler Street, even though I wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that helps to the perception of where we are, mm. right? I'm not saying that there's not something wrong, but let's not add fuel to the fire that doesn't need to be there with false accusations or false rumors.
Yeah, and that's the kind of the same thing that we see and hear about when there are car accidents or things like that. And it's almost the speed at which information travels now, and usually bad news travels much faster than good news on the internet and on social media. And things come out before, you know, it's really appropriate for them to come out. And that kind of leads me to my next question about this sort of trend we have now in, I don't know if it's citizen journalism or vigilante journalism or whatever. I think everyone who's on social media in Pittsfield knows There's a particular gentleman that exposes, you know, he seems to be the first on the scene and is recording things with his phone, his camera, maybe getting up into people's faces with things. There was an incident being chased with an axe. I don't know. You've been out of the town for a little while. So maybe you haven't seen that. But there's some kind of crazy stuff, right? And how does a city deal with that element also when trying to wrap everything else, try to do the right thing of, you know, prosecuting and finding criminals and arresting them and keeping the public safe? And then you've got this other element of, okay, you can't control that.
Right. Well, and again, it's I think the false rumors or the false accusations, even though I may have been out of town, I still paid attention, especially through some of the crisis moments of the stabbing, the shooting, the tornado watches, all kind of paying attention to it.
It's impossible to get away from it completely, isn't
right.
it?
Right. Well, you really can't. But, you know, there's the pieces for me, like the social media piece, that it's the telephone game in some cases, right? So I tell you something, you tell someone else. 10 people later, they're talking about something totally different than you and I talked about in the very beginning. And I don't know that you can stop the person. You know, for me...
Hard to manage that flow of information, though, right? Because that's kind of a key thing. Again, you've got a police investigation going on. If you're letting names out ahead of time, that could potentially damage an investigation.
Well, but I don't know, like, that you can block off the crime scene, but you can't stop someone from standing on the other side of the yellow tape.
That's right. Yeah.
And also, you know, I know... None of us want this kind of stuff, but when you start talking about the stabbing that was on Melville Street and you start saying that it started at Cumberland Farms and it went to here and there were life-threatening wounds when that wasn't the case, again, you asked me the question, people want to know if they can feel safe.
Right.
Well, with that kind of misinformation out there, the answer is no, they can't, because that's the perception and that's the information that we're putting out there. You know, and I think that that's, you know, are they safe is a hard question to ask. I'm walking down North Street. The bus driver has a heart attack, runs me off the road, right? I there are certain things that you can't predict. I think there are definitely things, and let's be clear, I think the chief, myself, and the DA are going to be tough on these situations and tough all summer to ensure that people are safe and feel good. But the social media piece, you know, it's one thing if you're putting out factual stuff, but, you know, you got to be careful, because if you are the one that's doing all this and then for whatever reason you're yelling at someone with an axe in your hand, you know, it's not that hard for someone to say, you know, they tried to kill me. And when you're waving an axe at someone...
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't want to be the subject of a attempted murder charge or something like that, because you're doing. And for me, I don't know what the purpose is, right? If you're looking to expose somebody, maybe it's expose me, it's expose the police department or whatever. Maybe you should reach out and have a conversation with those people and say, you know, hey, these are the things that I'm seeing that's missing, you know. Just before we went on the air, we talked about the phrase "do better." I'm not really sure I understand what that means in some cases. Is it constructive criticism and you have ideas for me to do things differently? Or are you just do better because you don't like what I'm doing? And so for me, those are pieces that I kind of have to filter through. And
well, again, being a keyboard warrior is kind of an easy job, right? It's very easy to criticize policies and things that are going on. And it's legitimate to have those conversations. And then at some point, you also have to ask yourself, all right, so what's the solution?
Right.
Right.
Well,
criticizing is one thing, but come up with a solution and let's talk that through.
You know, I see a lot of people doing the criticism of our keyboard warrior. Ignore it. Because if we're not getting attention, it'll go away. I mean... I don't know how many posts a day happen on social media, right? And you can see the ones that get the attention and it's viral.
Sure.
Then you see the other ones that you get 3 likes and 1 comment. All right, clearly folks weren't interested in that topic. So if the attention wasn't given, even the folks that are now battling saying, you know, you shouldn't do this. Well, great. Now we have a platform where this is my First Amendment right. I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, if you ignore it and it's not getting any attention or it's not going viral, maybe it stops.
Yeah. Well, I think that's probably why Merriam-Webster recognized the term rage baiting, right? Because that's the world we live in right now. And it's one of those just realities that we realize that things, you know, communication has changed, social interaction has changed. We're all kind of adjusting to it. And as we see these, you know, new models that come forward and people sort of pushing the edges of the envelope, and then, you know, how do we react, I guess, is what you're saying. Peter Marchetti, the mayor of the city of Pittsfield, here on the program this morning on Morning Drive, 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. And so along with that, one of the ideas that came forward, I saw from Ward 2 City Councilor Cam Cunningham. It was after the city council meeting that he posted this, so I assume it'll come up at a future meeting. There's a proposal to use Morningside School, which will be closing as of tomorrow, as a combination police station and community hub of some kind. It's obviously not a new idea. An idea has been around. You've talked about it here on this show as well. So give us the pros and cons of that. Is it a good idea to repurpose that, especially in the Morningside neighborhood where we're seeing many of these issues right now, bringing the police closer to that neighborhood and improving their facilities? Would that be a positive step?
Well, I mean, I have been exploring this concept for several months now. We know that we need a new police station. And I think there needs to be a process. I saw the same post that you saw this morning, although I had a brief conversation with Councillor Cunningham beforehand, and we've been on the same page. I think that there were a few things I wanted to do first. One, there's a lot of anxiety revolving around the closing of Morningside.
Mm-hmm.
When we were having meetings about closing Morningside, and we had a public hearing the night that I went in, and we may have talked about this before, the principal of Morningside handed me a letter from a fourth grade student who wanted to talk to me about bullying. And he also reached out to the superintendent. And, you know, it was amazing to me that some of the arguments that you were hearing about closing the school and sending kids to other schools is they would get bullied.
Mm-hmm.
And here you have a student in Morningside talking about how they get bullied,
sure.
Right? So, like, am I creating a new problem? Or is that problem already there and we need to pay more attention to that problem, mm-hmm. right? And so we met with him and we had a conversation, and he was I don't know how to phrase it, but right off the bat, Mr. Mayor, I have a deal for you. If you keep Morningside open, we can do X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, well, sorry, that ship sailed. Morningside's mm-hmm. closing. But let's talk about it. And so the gym is there.
Mm-hmm. Got a gym, a cafeteria,
the
library space upstairs.
One of the things that we've needed to do is let's talk about the structure of the building,
mm-hmm.
right? Is the building physically sound? Mm-hmm. I'm talking the walls.
Yeah, the bones, right?
The bones. I'm talking the walls,
bones?
The ceiling, or the roof. And if we're there, then can we retrofit it to become the police station?
Because mm-hmm. Obviously educating kids in an open space classroom, probably not the greatest idea.
Mm-hmm.
Could you house a police station in that same space? It's not going to have the same impact. In fact, it'd probably be an improvement over the space that they currently have built in, 1934 or whatever.
One of the questions I asked the chief was, does everyone need their own office, or it's cubicles?
Yeah.
Something that we can work with.
Mm-hmm.
And that was intentional, because mm-hmm. if everyone needed an office, it's probably not a good idea. Because the reason that we are choosing not to close up all the individual classrooms is because of the HVAC system and being able to heat every room and where it will be.
Right.
And so there's a difference between retrofitting a building and still having the open space.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, some would need to be changed, like an interview room would need to be what it is, mm-hmm. and the booking room would need to be what it is, yeah. but like still out there concepts. So I think what his petition helps with is, all right, we've been already as an internal team looking at the options. We will need funding to do a feasibility study.
Mm-hmm.
So from this petition, I guess it will have to flush out.
Yeah.
You know, you've asked me to do these things. How are we paying for it? And go from there.
So it's many, many steps away from being any kind of a reality, but the concept of it.
Well, I mean,
putting the police department there in that location, in that particular building, if it's workable, and then also working in this kind of community hub concept where you could use the gymnasium, where you could involve some local kids, give them a place to go to have some community, and maybe right. have this relationship with the police department that isn't an adversarial approach, right? I mean, there's a lot of good possibilities there.
I mean, I think so. You know, we talked about the playground on Morningside.
Mm-hmm.
Can it stay there? Maybe, right? If the redesign has, and it becomes a police station, and that's where prisoners will enter and exit the building, you don't want to play. You don't want the playground there,
right?
But we have all that open space right across the street where the old Hess gas station was.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we can move the playground to that piece of city property so that kids have a place to go. All concepts. The gym is a given that can be a community space. The old community room where meetings took place can be a community space. What my fourth grade student told me, the music wing, where he wanted a like mini library. That's also a possible community space. The second floor library probably won't be community space if we're going to be building in a police station. I'd love for the cafeteria to still be community space, but without doing some work and looking at a feasibility plan, you know, I think that it would be great if we could include it, but it may not be. But again, we're putting the cart before the horse.
Sure.
Without doing the piece, you know, I think we need to have several community meetings in the Morningside neighborhood. And, you know, I think it'll be very important to hear from folks that live there, not folks that don't live there.
Yeah.
Right. I served as chairperson of Morningside Initiative from early 2000 to maybe 2012, 2015 time frame.
And that was your neighborhood for a good amount of time.
That was the neighborhood I grew up in.
Yeah.
And all we heard during that time frame is that the police aren't here, right? So,
and let's face it too, that we hear a lot of people talk about, well, we need more, you know, foot patrols on North Street. We need more police, community police presence or whatever. And even if you had the best funded and best manned, you know, situation doing that, you still wouldn't have prevented the shooting that happened on Tyler Street, right? I mean, not everything is preventable just by adding more police or more foot patrols or whatever. You'd like to think that simple solutions like that would work. And, you know, maybe there are things that could be done, but you're not going to prevent everything.
Well, true, right?
Just never.
And again, I think that we need to take appropriate actions for appropriate behaviors or crimes.
Yep.
And I think we have to really take a deeper dive into what's the problem, and then what's the solution, right? If it's a non-PD matter, if it is a mental health issue or a substance use issue, are they the best people to respond? Or, you know, as we're putting into play the community health workers, and really trying to create a better team with our social service agencies and collaborate more. You know,
and that's a major change, right? I mean, in concept, knowing that, you know, you send the appropriate person to deal with the appropriate situation. It isn't always, you know, an armed police officer, you know, with the finger on the trigger. And that's the thought that people have. So you send in somebody who can actually de-escalate the situation and take care of the person who's in need.
Well, and for me, I look at it in a more global picture, right? We can very easily create a report of, say, the top 25 antagonizers on North Street.
Mm.
Could have it by the time I get back to my office, mm. right? And I can go to the Breen Center and say, here's my top 25 antagonizers on North Street. Can you help me? And they can probably say yes. And then that's the end of the conversation. Because they can't say, hey, see here, Mr. Jones? Well, yeah, course. We deal with him.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've had some meetings internally, and how can we work together?
Mm.
Right? Is there a possibility of getting a waiver signed by person X where not only can we talk to an agency, but the agency can talk to us? So when we're dealing with the problem, everybody's on the same page.
Mm.
Right? If you have an individual that has dealt with the city and dealt with ServiceNet and dealt with the Breen Center and dealt with CSO, there's five different versions of what's going on, and no one's able to work together to kind of solve the problem. And so, you know, there's the direction of where we're trying to go, that the city can't solve all of the problems.
Yeah.
And the social service agencies can't solve all the problems. But I think there's been somewhat of a disconnect between what we do and what they do. And there's really no combination. And I tell folks, you know, a year ago, probably like a year ago last night, if we're taping this on a Thursday,
yeah.
that a gentleman came storming into City Hall on a school committee night, looking for everybody and anybody, including the mayor. And, you know, when I was like, I'm going to excuse myself from school committee and go out because I don't know how this is going to fare.
Mm.
Right. And if this person comes screaming into the meeting, and first question is, what seems to be your issue? I'm looking for the mayor. Well, today's your lucky day. You found him. And we engaged in a conversation. And then I had interactions with this person four or five times. And for me, it was like, where is that someone who's keeping an eye on the important tasks that this person needs to complete, right? You go and you apply for housing,
mm-hmm.
and then you have a follow-up appointment in 3 weeks, but you don't show up.
Hmm.
And then you have a follow-up appointment in 3 weeks and you don't show up. Well, you're scratched. You go to the bottom of the list. And it's time to move on. So the question then becomes, who's there to help these folks, right? And mm-hmm. when we're talking about it, you and I, like, no one keeps track of that I need to be here on the radio show at 7:30. Well, that's not true, because Brittany and Catherine do that. But no one keeps track to tell you what to do every moment of your day. But you don't have issues that are preventing you from being able to maybe think logically. And so if you know at 7:30 this morning that tomorrow at noon you got to go to an appointment, but then you engage in behaviors that change your thought process, at noon tomorrow you may not know to go.
Mm.
And so for me, that's kind of like a piece of, geez, like, where is that someone to put the stick in the wheel so that everything stops and we get you to where you need to be? I think that piece is missing, and we need to do some work on that.
And again, it goes to the idea that there isn't one simple answer to any of this, that every one mm-hmm. of these stories is different, that everyone who are in these situations need different things, and that there are lots of causes. There isn't one single cause that you can go back and say, well, if we just, you know, fix this, then everything will be fine. And or, you know, throw more police at it, or throw whatever it is, you're going to not necessarily going to work. Complex, complex issue.
Yeah. And throw more police. People aren't applying.
Right.
Right.
It's another problem.
So throw more police.
Mm.
And then there's the funding issue. So it's very complicated.
Yeah, yeah. Mayor Peter Marchetti, my guest here this morning on Morning Drive, 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. We are going to take that top of the hour break right now and return with lots more with the mayor in just a moment. So stick around. We'll be right back after this.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR-FM.
Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield. 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts. The Northern Berkshire Early Intervention Program is now accepting applications for an occupational therapist to support child development, empower families, and change futures. 2026 graduates welcome to apply. Apply today at ucpwma.org.
Hey, it's Sean from WTBR-FM. Whether you just found this station for the first time or you've been listening for years, you might not know everything about WTBR-FM. Want to find out more? It's easy. Just go to WTBRFM.com. You can find full programming schedules, listen to the station anywhere in the world, subscribe to our podcasts, and even learn to create a program of your own. And of course, donate to the station. That's WTBRFM.com. Check it out today.
Berkshire Running Foundation was created to advance and support the positive impact the running community has in the neighborhoods we live. In the past decade, we have been able to donate over $300,000 to dozens of nonprofit organizations here in Berkshire County through our races and free wellness programming. Please visit berkshirerun.org to support our mission to continue to have a social and economic impact on the Berkshires.
Hey, water lovers, this is Leslie Gabriel, your water ambassador, host of And So It Flows. Our water music and water culture brings water outside the cup. Moisten your ears every Tuesday at 2 p.m. here at WTBR 89.7 FM. Love your water.
In the abundance of water, the fool will get thirsty.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu.
And from Sandrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Massachusetts. Retractable awnings, retractable screen, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms, customized solutions available. Online at Sandrini.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back. WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to the show. Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Also watching us on Access Pittsfield Channel 1301 and maybe on the Pittsfield TV Select app. Just want to mention also the Pittsfield 4th of July Parade is this year celebrating the generations this year, and Pittsfield Community Television is bringing you the live coverage. You can join PCTV on July 4th beginning at 9:30 a.m. for live parade coverage from South Street in Pittsfield on PCTV Access Pittsfield Channel 1301, PCTV Select 1, and on the Pittsfield Community Television Facebook page. Live coverage of the 4th of July Parade is supported by Greylock Federal Credit Union, and also thanks to the Boys and Girls Club of the Berkshires, Hud Puckers Pub and Grill, and Beacon Bank. We thank them for their support and coverage of the parade that we do every year. It's the single largest thing that we do here at PCTV every year, and it's a big thing. We're right in the middle of all the planning for it now and getting our parade muscles on, you know, all the good stuff. Can't wait to do that. Looking forward to it. Mayor Peter Marchetti, my guest again on the show this morning. We are recording the show, but it's playing on Thursday the 25th. So welcome to Thursday the 25th. Let's talk about some construction projects going on in the city. There is a new traffic light at West and West, and it was turned on this week. You drive through that intersection. How does it feel to you now? Does it feel any better?
Well, I think it does. Yeah. You know, it's I can tell you that it's only been, 24 hours or so that I've driven through it. I think that was a long project in terms of those conversations started like 2016 or 2017. Some of the unfortunate incidents that took place may have helped speed up that process. when I would campaign and I was talking with folks from Salisbury Estates, that was the biggest issue for them is that intersection is scary and not really comfortable to drive through.
It's kind of odd the way it was laid out. Again, you know, stay one road kind of turning to the left, and you never really knew where cars were coming from, if there were pedestrians or bikes or whatever. It was just a big unknown in a lot of ways. So this probably will bring that back together. We've got bike lanes and stuff in there now. It's very clearly marked.
Well, three or four crosswalks with, you know, beacon signals.
Yeah.
You know, I think
speed humps.
Speed humps.
Not very popular with a lot of people, but it does slow the traffic down, and that's the point, right?
Well, and I think it's interesting because as it's happened, I've hit a few of the speed bumps a few times and went, whoa. But then look at the speedometer, and it's like, oh, yeah that's why.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going the speed limit, I don't think they're as big a deal as folks make them out to be, but we live in a world where everyone's in a hurry. And that's one of the things, you know, I was trying to check out this morning coming through the intersection is that the west traffic is the predominant traffic in that space. And so trying to really get the groove of it and see. But this morning there was no line on west heading up west towards BCC of traffic trying to get through. And no lines on west, either traveling east or west. And like I said, it's only, I drove through there like noon yesterday and then after work and then this morning. So it hasn't been a ton of time. But, I mean, I think it will help alleviate the congestion in that area. And, you know, for folks that have the concerns, if you're in that intersection at 4:30 any weekday, or 8 o'clock, 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning, there's a lot of congestion of folks backing up on west around the corner towards the big Y that hopefully we can alleviate.
Yeah. Always something to tweak and change with that. But overall, the intersection is much safer than it was before, and people can keep an eye on, you know, if you're going to be walking through there or biking through there, you're going to be feeling a little bit more protected, I think. Other issues with road work this year, there's some concern about a bridge on Dalton Ave, right behind the, what would you call that, the Dick's Sporting Goods complex there. That's really now just a bridge that's over a bike path. It used to be a railroad bridge. At one time, and is the, you know, how is that right now? It looks like it's crumbling at the top, but the actual integrity of the bridge is not a problem.
Right. So, you know, I think that that's a lengthy conversation that we need to have with MassDOT about kind of what the fixes are.
Because that's Route 9, right, which is a state road.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You know, I think for me, and, you know, we were talking about, you know, the police station and Morningside and roads. The focus that we really need to put in place is a complete infrastructure report of not just the roads, but the bridges and the buildings and, you know, everything kind of moves slow, but we're in the process of putting on, we're in the process of an RFP for Hibbert School to you know, unload that into potential housing. We need to be looking and having a really in-depth conversation of how things happen. And so that's, you know, that's a piece of it.
Because certainly we are dealing with some old infrastructure in the city of Pittsfield, as we've seen, water main breaks and, you know, things happen. We have some old pipes and we have some old bridges. And, you know, I think the thing that hurts people the most is the surprise, right? It's like, you know, it's getting old, you know, it's bad.
Right.
And then something happens and like the bridge shuts down or your water goes out for a little while or something. It's like that, that kind of brings it home a little bit. And then you realize, yeah, well, I guess we do have to invest in this stuff.
Well, but I guess what I'm trying to say is, how about we invest in it prior to those moments, right? Like many, many years ago, the basement at City Hall became unusable, mm-hmm. and we started using space. Well, do we need to be using 100 North as space, or can we retrofit the Springside House and move a couple of those departments to Springside House? Mm-hmm. It's pretty centrally located, plenty of parking, and it's a city building.
Yeah.
Can be repaired. Old Town Hall is in the process of being, rehabbed for offices. Let's have a greater conversation, right? Mm-hmm. The schools. Let's not have knee-jerk decisions. And I don't believe that Morningside was. I mean, we've been mm-hmm. talking about the need to close schools for a period of time. But if we have 4,800 students, how many elementary schools do you need? Mm-hmm. And do you need 8 or now 7, mm-hmm. maybe soon to be 6?
Yeah.
Or can you get by with 4 or 5? And when I say get by, I'm not trying to kind of diminish what it is, but
it's right sizing though, right?
Right sizing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if we right size, what's the savings? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure from a staffing standpoint, there's tons of savings, because if you're going to do a 1 in 20 student ratio, that's talking of your staffing or, and I'm just throwing numbers out, but I'm not putting electricity and oil mm-hmm. or gas, into a building.
Right.
And, what we do know, is that schools really convert nicely to apartments. Mm-hmm. So if we're able to kind of unload some of the buildings and right size, mm-hmm. Is there savings there that can, allow us to do things differently?
Yeah, we've seen the demographic trends and, there's no new baby boom coming.
No.
There's not going to be a huge influx of new families or new students to, have a need for more classroom seats in the future.
Right. And a little bit more planning, right? We talked mm-hmm. about the feasibility study that Councillor Cunningham is asking me to do for the police station. Mm-hmm. Part of that also needs to be, what are you going to do with that police station if you move it, mm-hmm. right? You're not going to move it and then wait 5 years to figure out what you're going to do with it.
Yeah.
It should be part of the plan. Mm-hmm. If we're going to move it, this is what we're hoping to do with it. And again, I think the inside of that building is beyond repair, mm-hmm. but the bones might be okay.
Yeah.
I don't know about the roof. I know that the four walls are in great shape, but we shouldn't be piecemealing. If we're going to do something, we should be, all right, here's the plan. This is what we're going to do from A to Z.
Well, and it goes to planning, and that actually leads me into another question. So the city has a master plan. That's something that gets updated every so many years, and that has a good deal of community input, and a lot is put into that. How often is that referenced? And then there's also the open space and recreation plan, which was just recently announced, and you're looking for input from that from citizens up until, I think, July 24th or so. Probably on the city's website. Maybe talk to how important that planning process is.
Well, I mean, I think that it's very important, right? What's the direction? Where do you want to go? What are the priorities, right? We think on our end, we know what the priorities are, right? The priorities are more housing, more jobs, mm-hmm. Improved infrastructure. But what are we missing? Right. And so I think it's the opportunity to kind of go do that. I think the great part about Director Dodds is that we don't create a plan and then put it on the shelf. Mm-hmm. Like, we follow the plan. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really the important piece, that for all these plans that we do, I know the open space and recreation plan, which is something all these plans we visit every 5 or 10 years to kind of do, things may change.
Yeah.
Right. We were joking before going on air about my trip, and where I was, there were bike ports, and I was like, holy moly, right? It was like, okay, this is Florida with car ports, but now bike ports. And so,
and this is in a cold weather environment also.
Yeah,
right?
It's not Florida. They kind of have winter like us too.
Yeah.
But it was kind of amazing to see A, the old architecture. B, I don't think cars were the primary mode of transportation.
Right. Very European.
Very, very European. Mm-hmm. You know, bikes, buses, mm-hmm. Which to me look like trolley cars because they were all hooked up to wires and stuff. And then the train system.
I still say we should bring back streetcars in Pittsfield.
Well, I mean,
make it a unique place. You know, I mean, that we had it for years, and I bet you people would use it.
Well, and
it's a crazy thought, but it'd be fun.
I think it would add to the character of who, what, when, where, and why.
Yeah.
I mean, but you can't just here it is,
right?
If exactly. if you were gonna do something like that, you need to plan. You need to kind of ask the question of what would that do? How could that be?
Mm-hmm.
Crazy as it sounds, if it's still one lane of traffic and we have those big bike lanes, if you shorten the bike lane and put the streetcar thing in there, that could work. But where else is it going, right?
Yeah.
It can't just go up and down North Street. And then is that now in competition with the BRTA and the buses, mm-hmm. right? But it was totally a totally different vibe.
Yeah. Did you feel like any of that impression that it left on you, does that sort of inform the redesign of North Street that could come in the next couple of years?
I mean, I think it would make a lot of changes in my mind and based on what I saw, crosswalks turning automatically as part of the turn signal piece.
Hmm.
Again, planning and not planning for planning's sake, but planning for efficiencies and better outcomes. I mean, I think that's really the focus that we need to be on. I think we had the two ballot questions that have recently been shot down by the state Supreme Court that were really sounding wonderful in some aspects, but then also could have some major damages to communities. So when we plan, we need to really plan what if this happens, then what here and what there. And I think that's the important piece of like the downtown redesign, but also everything else. Like 20 something years ago when we started doing housing in downtown, I was like, who wants to live there?
Mm-hmm.
Well, every time we have a housing project in downtown, it's all filled before the construction is done. So you need to make sure that you're doing a wide net to ask folks of what they want.
And it's fair to say, though, that we will have another redesign of North Street in the future. We don't know. It's not planned for a particular timeline at this point.
There is no timeline. I was already hoping it would be in motion.
Because there were three or four different designs and nothing's been chosen yet.
I think there is a primary design that's leading the way at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But part of the planning piece, it may look good on paper. But does it provide greater efficiencies? Does it provide greater outcomes? If there is a fire call, all right, truck number one gets there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a major fire. If there are seven cars between truck one and truck two, does it work? And those are the pieces that need to be kind of really hashed out before a plan like that would go public.
Probably some of the things that we talked about with the West Street interchange project will then apply to North Street, which is allowing people to know more predictably where everyone is going to be,
right?
Where the cars will travel, where the bikes will be, where the pedestrians can come across. Will people feel safe doing all those things? Will there be like a hard barrier between the cars and the bikes, for example, so that the cars can't turn into the bike lane in order to make that right-hand turn or left-hand turn or whatever? Those are the kind of things that seem like they need to get worked out.
Well, I think if you drive West Street now, man, is it pretty bright with the different colors and all the lines. And the important piece will be, what does that look like next year? It better look the same, right? Because if you allow everything to fade, now you're back to a North Street situation.
Right, which is constant upkeep.
And so, it's a small thing, line painting, but it becomes a very big thing, especially North Street or other more traveled roads where the markings aren't clearly visible.
It's the little stuff, right?
Yeah.
It's the maintenance and the upkeep. And I think people, residents do appreciate that. You know, that's when we talk about snow plowing. And then after that season's over, we want to sweep the streets. And then we want to paint the lines. And, you know, if it doesn't happen quickly enough, you start to hear about it. But it does make a difference. And it's the regular, everyday life of people. Right. And that's what they want to see.
And it's planning, right?
Planning.
I mean, some of the stuff happens on a yearly basis, mm-hmm. right? Painting crosswalks and painting lines and painting school in front of schools so that folks know.
Yeah.
Should just be like a rotating, like every August 1st, this is what we do.
Yeah.
And that type of planning, I think, becomes helpful.
Obviously, this year it will be a little more difficult given the budget situation, right? Because there wasn't as much of a budget to put toward public works. There were some positions that were eliminated and some things we won't be able to do going forward. Do you expect that fewer streets will be paved or fewer sidewalks will be rebuilt, things like that? What are we in for this coming fiscal year?
Well, so for this fiscal year at the moment, there is no road work really being planned outside of stuff that has already been approved. The commissioner is looking at some possibilities, and so we'll end up with a later start, and it will probably be more springtime.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things that I wanted to kind of look at, and we've done $15 million worth of road work in the last three plus years.
Yeah.
Is ensuring that we get caught up.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the things that we don't do well is communicate what the road schedule is going to be. And so if you put out a list that's fiscal year 27, that means it can be done anywhere between July 1 of 26 and June 30th of 27. Most people expect it to be done by November of 26.
Yeah, they'd love that.
Right?
Yeah.
And so what does that mean? And so every year, and I think last year was really a classic example of it, we were still doing fiscal year 25's road work in July and August of fiscal year 26.
Mm-hmm.
So let's kind of play catch up. Let's really kind of look at where we are. Let's talk about the pieces. Let's get caught up on things like line painting. Can we do fog sealing and crack sealing to preserve the roads? So this year will be that year.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can begin planning early for 28 as to what the road work looks like.
Another big thing that needs to be planned out and is happening right now, but it seems like it's stalled a bit, is the demolition of the old Wakona Park grandstand. And there were some issues apparently this week with regards to air quality or something like that, that's maybe pushing that back off a little bit. Is that going to be a big delay for the project?
I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that the hope was to have the demolition project and a potential rebuild, you know, kind of tag teaming each other and going in that direction. We're not there.
Mm-hmm.
I suspected the demolition would be a lot harder than it was. And so my worry about that is...
you can't just bring a wrecking ball in and take it down, right?
Right.
There's a lot more to it than that.
And the more complicated it gets, the more costly it gets, right? And so I think those are kind of pieces of a puzzle that, sure, like in a fantasy land, give me a little bit of gasoline and a match and... we'll have it on the ground in no time.